tabletop board games, card games, role-playing games, and anything else that might come up. I'm John, and I've been playing mostly role-playing games for the last 30 years or so, and I'm joined by Will.
Hi, I'm Will. I've been playing games for, 15 years probably. I run a playtesting group in London, and I like various things in games. I like good stories, I like having fun, I like trying to work out if I'm being presented with a Nash equilibrium.
And Ben?
Hi, my name's Ben, and I've been gaming, again, probably about sort of 30 years. Starting with sort of Redbox D&D, all the way up to kind of, you know, more modern-day Savage Worlds and Fate Core stuff. Mainly a role player, love board games as well, and really enjoy mechanics, I think, although trying to bring more of a story-based gaming into role-playing these days.
The Redbox. I think that's what the I started Redbox. With as well.
Was me too.
Was it AD&D?
Yeah.
No, Redbox was D&D.
It was D&D.
Yeah. It took me many years to add that A onto the front of my D&D. It's very exciting.
So today we're going to talk about multiverses in games and board games, card games, etc. Will, did you have something multiverse that you wanted to open with?
I don't know. I mean, there are sort of these games that have sort of a bunch of different worlds that people sort of play through. I think a popular one, depending on who you are, is Magic the Gathering. They spend a lot of time building these worlds, a lot of time sort of deciding on the style of the society and all that kind of thing. And they have these characters, the planeswalkers, who walk between the different planes, you know, the different worlds, and generally cause havoc and problems when they show up. But I think it's interesting that they've decided to do that in a game that is, because there's a lot of ways to repeat things, but with different, repeat things mechanically, but with different sort of flavor around it. I mean, you can have a creature that, you know, has the same mana cost, the same statistics, but a lot of what it's like is determined by its flavor text. And, you know, if it, the difference between it being a lizard and being, you know, a giant is mechanically very small, but in terms of the flavor, there's a big change there.
I see. The reason I sort of got thinking about multiverses lately is because of Monty Cook's Kickstarter for The Strange. I think that's kind of what made me pick it as a topic for this time, or I thought might be a good subject for discussion. But unfortunately, I don't know that much about magic and how the whole sort of different planes of existence fit into the mechanics. And
well, they're all sort of worlds. I mean, recently, for example, they've done a few different things. So there was sort of a gothic horror kind of world called Innistrad, which had sort of vampires in you know, the sense of Bram Stoker's Dracula, that kind of thing, and, you know, creatures like Frankenstein's monster knitted, you know, the zombies were occasionally sort of knitted together out of bits and pieces, as opposed to reanimated corpses, which is what they normally are in magic. So they had that, and they've also at the moment got a block called Theros, which is very much inspired by Greek mythology. So obviously, like, a popular thing in Greek mythology is the Trojan horse. They've got sort of their own equivalent for that. So there's a card which you play it, it goes over to your opponent's side of the table, but each turn you get like a token, a soldier, out of it. So they've tried to build these things which are very much on the flavor of the cards, what they call top-down design. You know, so you come up with a theme for a card and then make something around that, rather than the other way around, where you start with, you know, a whole, you need to make a card that does a certain thing, and so you build the flavor onto it afterwards. And I think that's good. I think that's led to a lot of really fun cards.
Is every expansion like its own kind of universe or world or something? I can't remember how it works.
Yeah, they started doing that reasonably recently. I mean, I say that it was probably about 10 years ago now, but it all used to take place in one big world, and they stopped doing that because every so often they had to, you know, build a new story and things like that. But they held all this backstory that was sort of there in the background, you know, weighing down on them. and they thought it would be easier to just start over in a new place.
Ben, did you have any feelings, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a while since I magicked and gathered, but yeah, certainly when I played it, I think it was all in the one one universe, so I haven't really seen the new stuff. But yeah, I like what you're saying about the design element. I mean, obviously from board gaming, it's sometimes I quite enjoy Ameritrash games over Euro games. And the main thing there is, of course, theme. But there's certainly been some good games I've enjoyed where it's clear they've come out of a brilliant mechanical game and then thought, right, let's just kind of paste this theme on over here. And I think Reiner Knizia is kind of quite guilty about it. He makes fantastic games, but the themes are kind of pasted on at the last minute. So, yeah, certainly with the Magic, if they just pasted on that theme, having kind of some mechanically good cards, you're going to kind of see through that. You're going to sort of say, oh, well, they could have just made up anything here.
Yeah.
But by really kind of make sure I got a strong thematic set of cards before trying to develop mechanics, I think they've set themselves a greater challenge, but probably a more satisfying outcome.
Well, by the sales figures and, you know, the number of people playing and all that kind of thing, it seems to be working quite well. It's been a huge success for them.
I can't think of that many like board games that really take a theme of, you know, multiverses, like have it baked into the actual game itself.
It's tricky, I think, because you have sort of, you know, you normally have just the one board, and unless it represents different bits and different parts and things like that, it's quite tricky to do something like that, I think.
Yeah, I think the reason I like it in the role-playing genre, you know, sort of gameplay is it opens you up to, I don't know, just exploring all sorts of different little settings and milieu that you just would never, you know, just isn't worth. I mean, I think we've all sat down and read a setting that I thought, oh, that is great, you know, and that'd be great for, you know, maybe a one shot or something, but then,
yeah, could I run an entire campaign there?
Yeah,
out of things to do,
or even a one shot, you know, it's just so much effort just for that, just so that you can have a little taster of that world. And having a campaign where you have the same character, so you're not constantly changing characters, is kind of a cool way to explore it. And I mean, that's why, you know, I came up with, you know, a particular game that we've been playing, but that's why I was quite excited in some ways by Monty Cook's The Strange, because it seemed like they were kind of trying to do a similar thing. They were kind of trying to find a way to knit all these different worlds together and call them recursions. I'm not quite sure why they call them recursions, but I don't know, I like that concept. I've always loved the concept of like mashing up two different things together.
I think it's the appeal behind, you know, some quite good television shows. I mean, Doctor Who, you know, they're always going to different places and times. Sliders is sort of a classic thing, you know, always traveling to a different world where things are, the characters recur because everybody, you know, has a doppelganger. An equivalent in each world. So I think it's a fun thing, and it's obviously a way of telling good stories.
I think, yeah, it can be, as long as there's two elements. I think there's one that you have to kind of keep things balanced. And what I like about some of the genre mashups is the idea that you could have someone like a protagonist that it's able to break the rules in some ways. I think for some reason I find that really fun. The idea that you can have, you know, just sort of a normal story, but, and normally in that situation, the protagonist would be, you know, in quite a big pickle. But then they have some ability or device or something that they've got from another world, which allows them to sort of bend or break the rules. But then keeping that balanced is the other side of the coin, is, you know, what's difficult in a role-playing game. You know, if they can just whip out jetpacks every time they want to, you know, scale the cliffs of insanity, then that's not going to be fun, you know, if they can just shrug off, you know, you know, every knife attack from a cultist, you know, in Cthulhu with, you know, ridiculous futuristic armor. I'm not sure that would be fun. So
no.
Working out mechanisms to still allow them to have ways that they can, you know, have a, you know, use their abilities in ways that other people in the universe can't, but at the same time regulate that in some way.
I think it doesn't necessarily have to be about, you know, the stuff that they have, but it could be about attitudes, you know, or knowledge. If you're a character from a futuristic world and you go to a world that's, you know, really far in the past, you might find that you're completely out of your depth when it comes to simple things which are important there, like, I don't know, being able to build a fire because you're used to there being heat and light wherever you go. But your ability to sort of reason out problems that are less practical and more abstract could be helpful to you, for example.
Well, it was interesting. There was an old system, I think, back from TSR in the mid-90s called Amazing Engine, which I think tried to do... It was certainly my first encounter with anything multiversey, and it tried to do a similar thing in that, I think, the basics of your character, you kind of built up a core set of stats, and that was your guy. Now, this is obviously still back in much more mechanical role-playing stuff, and stuff like Fate Core, you might create a character who has a common personality, common set of aspects, no matter kind of what time period or world he's playing in. And then I think each book then built your actual ability scores and skills on top of that. So when I had the Bug Hunters book, which was set of basically an alien style world, so it would pump up your shooting skills a bit and make you a bit more hardy as a fighter. But then when you want to take those characters into another setting, I think the only other one out when I was playing was for Fairy Queen and Country, which was kind of a Victorian England magic style. Then your shooting skill, even if your core stat says you're pretty agile, your shooting skill is still going to be a bit lower because it's not a shooting setting. It's based around different things, based around diplomacy and other such elements. So, I mean, that was my first kind of idea of at least there's something you can keep in common with your character as you move through the time zones. I guess it sort of worked in that you definitely, you know, if you were the fast guy, you were the fast guy in every system. If you were the strong guy, you were still a strong guy in every system, even if that's not a system that where strengths of any use. Mm. Like a futuristic setting, obviously, it's not so useful. But no, you didn't seem to keep much about your character, I felt, as you moved between the worlds. So I guess, yeah, you had some mechanics in common, but you might play a sort of totally different personality, which kind of made it feel like, wow, that's just a new character, really.
So that sounds interesting. Do you think that, like, it's very hard to do multiverse games because of this problem of carrying skills over? Like, either they're too useful or they're not useful enough. It's very hard to find a middle ground.
Well, I think if you play if you try and take on something too mechanically rich, you might have trouble kind of mapping that between the worlds.
Right.
I think when we were looking at starting a multiverse game a few years ago, I actually suggested to John we try Savage Worlds, only because I'd seen Savage Worlds. Just the rule set seems to apply in so many settings and seems to work well in all those settings. Although then, even then, when you play a particular Savage setting, you'll have the campaign book and it will have the extra skills extra edges to kind of give it a bit more flavor. So if you've got a character who's only built from the generic Savage Worlds rules, then you're losing all this flavor in each of the worlds, all these unique abilities, unique, say, Deadlands, the various other Savage settings.
Yeah,
I think that's the only thing that makes a multiverse campaign difficult is, so you go to the world and if it's just window dressing and you can't really interact with it, you know, like say you went to, you know, the world of darkness where it was primarily you interacting with vampires, and unless you're able to adopt some of their abilities in some way, it kind of, you know, would just feel like you're just sort of touring around and looking at stuff, you know, without actually being able to be involved in it. I mean, a lot of the flavor of vampire is being a vampire and having those abilities and, you know,
and all the angst that comes along with them, right?
Yeah.
Well, and if you're just visiting, you're never going to have that because you don't doesn't stay with you in the same way. Yeah, I see what you mean.
Exactly. So my
so maybe the Amazing Engine thing got it right, that you kind of metamorphosize into a character who fits into the setting. When you enter the Bug Hunter setting, you become the Colonial Marine. You're not just some guy who's teleported in from nowhere and is suddenly thrust into something. You become one of the characters in that universe.
Well, does that not run the risk of going, you know, the other way if you feel your character doesn't have a consistent identity because he keeps hopping between places? I mean, I guess maybe if that happened to you, you know, that's
yeah,
what,
that is the dual problem, absolutely, yeah. It's more of a kind of quantum leap, anyone remembers that show, scenario, where suddenly you're in the body of someone new and you've got to kind of figure out what to do this session.
Right, which makes it a little bit difficult because then you'll be in that quantum leap situation where every time you're kind of like, okay, well, who am I now? What can I do? Which can absolutely be fun. But
well, Quantum Leap, I think, you know, it was, I mean, in some ways, like, something like that might make for quite a good role-playing game because, you know, there was always something that he had to do that would sort out the situation there and mean that he could leap. So, you know, you'd constantly be solving problems in that sense, and there'd always be a sense of forward progression, I guess.
And the problems would be relevant to whatever persona you had adopted.
Yeah.
I think The Strange is doing that somewhat. But, you know, Jonas and I had been discussing this, you know, one of the guys in our gaming group, and he's, you know, we more or less have come up with a situation that is kind of in between. So it's kind of a compromise. So it's completely player-driven, whether they want to be, you know, part of that setting or adopt things or not, you know, that's... In theory, it's not supposed to be forced on them, although I think we've had that situation in the game we're playing. But yeah, I think that, to my mind, that's the best way to handle it, is to have it be a continuum where, you know, you can choose how much you want to change, kind of thing. So, but I think John Wick came up with a role-playing game called Flux, or sort of a multiverse sort of setting, and the rules of it are kind of more rigid. Have you guys heard of Flux? I don't.
Yes.
Have I mentioned it?
Okay.
So only like, the bad card game.
Yeah, unfortunately, it has shares the title with the Flux card. No, it's kind of like that. I guess maybe you got that idea from the Flux card game, where all of a sudden you'll suddenly find yourself in a new universe, like. Sorry, the universe that you're in more or less dies, and then is replaced or is renewed by this, you know, new universe. And your characters, I think the way he built it into the rules was you can flip back so many character sheets or something. Will, is that right? Where you can
I remember something like that. That's right. Yeah, you get sort of is it abilities from previous
things? And skills or something. Yeah. So if you know. Or had some magical ability in one universe, and you were in some futuristic place that had no magic. You could spend some energy or whatever to go and back and remember that ability or something for a short amount of time. I think The Strange is doing something similar as well. You can sort of do limited transference of things from other universes. But yeah.
So, we're board gamers, some of us, slightly to move to something slightly different. How would you go about making a multiverse board game? I'm not talking about, you know, a game and a bunch of expansions that sort of take the mechanics and put them in different universes. I mean, a game where, I don't know, maybe you have sort of a Quantum Leap style thing where you've got to solve a problem in each universe and move on to the next one and do something like that.
Well, that
yeah, that's tough. I immediately went to.
Have we lost Ben?
Ben? Oh, yeah, I think we have.
It says busy there. Nope.
Yeah, it looks like net congestion.
We'll wait for him to come back, and that'll give you some time to think, I guess.
So yeah, I'm trying to think. Board game. Thank you. Board game. Oh, there we go.
I dropped off the call. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. No, we figured.
I think I must have accidentally invaded Games Workshop IP there, and they probably kicked me off the Skype call for their game. But yeah, Talisman, they crudely mashed up their 40k universe into their otherwise quite unique non-Warhammer related universe.
Ah, yes.
That's right.
Too much disgusting. But it wasn't a bad little expansion, so it was interesting to have the idea of swords.
I think the balance was a bit
coexisting. Yeah, the balance was,
I mean, like every Talisman expansion in some ways, but yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. They definitely kind of got more and more out of whack with later ones. But technically, yeah, I suppose that was the only multiverse board game I could channel. But they did that again through expansions. I'm not sure how you would release one these days without trying to package up each new world as, I suppose, an expansion. That said, I've just remembered, of course, latest Kickstarter, was it Shadows Over Brimstone? Shadows Under Brimstone? Which is from Flying Frog, who did Last Night on Earth and A Touch of Evil. But so this seems to be, I mean, it's right down my alley because I'm playing a lot of Deadlands, steampunk stuff at the moment. So this is set in the Wild West. Your characters are various Wild West pulpy archetypes. You've got your shamans and people, and you've gone into the mine shaft, and there were various encounters in the mine shaft with gribbly creatures from all manner of universes. And I think at various points in the board game, you find a portal that takes you to the other world, and there will be something you have to solve in the other world, I think. And obviously through the Kickstarter, they've done several of these other worlds, and each one, I think, 6 or 8 board tiles, a small collection of minis and a small deck of cards for dealing the encounters. So I kind of put both feet forward on that one and threw lots of money at it. So sometime next year, I'm hoping I should own that. And that I guess is quite a multiversey kind of game. You're always playing the same character. You don't change your role or anything. But there are definitely enemies and protagonists from all different kind of universes. And a license to print infinite expansions, of course, which is very fun.
Yeah. See, I would like a game that maybe was sort of split into 4 or 5 sections, and you're each sort of playing a character from one of those sections, maybe drafted to sort of deal with some sort of problem. So in each world, you go through, you try and you deal with whatever's supposed to be done there, and if you're from there, you have sort of advantages or disadvantages depending on that. So that gives everyone a chance to be useful. I guess probably a collaborative or cooperative board game. And if it was done well, if the flavour was good, I think it could be quite fun.
I think it lends itself to like asynchronous. Is that the right word? I don't know. Where
people taking their turns at the same time. You mean?
No, sorry. What's it called? I think they use it a lot in video
game.
Asymmetric. Sorry. Yeah. Asymmetric. You know, type of gameplay where you've got people with different goals and depending on what you are, you might want to do different, you know, your objectives might be slightly different. But then, I don't know, that maybe that's more of a competitive situation. But I had a, back in when I was in high school, we played this game called Killer. It was Steve Jackson Games. It was a live action thing where it started off really simply, where you had, you were basically just trying to, this is not very PC these days, but to assassinate each other. You know, this is not something that you could really do nowadays. But we took that concept further and further, and eventually, you know, they had some scenarios in the Killer book that were sort of took you beyond, that gave you some kind of story framework, so you're not just hitmen trying to kill each other. But they had things where, you know, there was like terrorists and counter-terrorists and lots of different scenarios. So we started coming up, you know, all being game geek, RPG geeks. We came up with things like, you know, werewolves and vampires. And the most epic game that we played was, there was a vampire lord who could turn people into his minions by sort of being alone with them. And he had a foil in the vampire hunter who could sort of recruit people to his cause and become, you know, to sort of train them to fight vampires and essentially enlarge his team as well. But the vampires obviously would exponentially sort of grow, because as soon as there's a couple of them, then they're, you know, spreading faster and faster. But there were other teams that they didn't know about, so some people were just started off as normal humans, but other people were selected to become, like, one might be a cyborg from the, you know, a Terminator, basically. We had, what else did we have? Vigilantes. We had, you know, people that were immortals from the movie Highlander. You know, they basically, they were only concerned about killing each other. That kind of stuff. And it
sounds cool.
It was really fun. I mean, I think it was really... ended up being one of the most fun things we'd done, and I'm not sure it would translate completely to a board game, but I think there's elements there that could be used. You're not really traveling through different worlds, though. It's just more of a genre mashup of, you know, different character types, but I think that would be fun, something like that. I still can't conceive of, you'd have to, if you had a board game that was a multiverse, I guess you'd have to have it set in one place in one time, but I don't know how, you know, I still am struggling, trying to wrap my brain around that.
Yeah, it's tricky.
But actually, I've been trying to look up, I haven't been reading as much lately, and I want to read some stuff that's in, you know, sort of multiverse fiction, and there isn't, apart from Zelazny's, you know, Amber Chronicles, there really isn't anything that kind of fits that mold. You know, most things seem to be like parallel universes where you've got, I think, is it Terry Pratchett has a series of books called The Long Earth, where there's, you know, you can sort of step into these dimensions that are, or not dimensions, but parallel universes that are similar. And they're sort of progressively weirder and weirder as you get further away from the Earth Prime or whatever. But that kind of stuff is interesting, you know, to explore the idea of, you know, the many, many worlds concept. But I just love tying it in with, you know, role-playing, you know, all the different settings that we've played, you know, through the years. I think that's why I always ask, you know, someone, you know, what's your favorite setting or what's your favorite sort of role-playing game, which isn't always a fair question, I guess. But
people aren't good at picking just one thing, one favorite anything.
No, right. That certainly goes for films. Sorry, Ben.
No, so I was just thinking. I mean, one of the attempts I made years ago, after I'd given up on this amazing engine concept, to still do something multiverse, is still have one game set in one location. In my mind, it would be sort of post-apocalyptic, ruined kind of city, but somewhere where all the times had come together. So again, similar question, went out and said, right, if you're playing a role-playing game, just tell me what character you'd want to be. And it's, oh, what system? I've like, no, just tell me what character you want to be. So I kind of got people to talk about Jedi Knights or heroic barbarians, blah, 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 rolled up their stats. I think I was trying to use D&D system. And just said, right, here you go, that's your character. And they're like, oh, this guy's a future guy, I'm a past guy. And I was like, oh, yeah, because the timelines have all come together and you're all in one place. So I guess the interesting there is, it's not so much you won't go to multiple universes in this. The idea is you're still only going to be set in one place. And it was a bit of a crude dungeon bash adventure at the end of the day. I think the main bad guy was Darth Vader. Again, more IP violation on my behalf.
But that's the fun bit, you know.
Well, absolutely. And then, of course, you know, that's how you can, you know, bring in, like, well, I've got a laser gun, or I've only got a battle axe. Well, of course, yeah, when you're fighting a lightsaber, your energy gun's not going to do any use. You know, it's got to be hand-to-hand combat with that guy. I'm not sure how good the battle axe would do either.
I would think, yeah.
It might have made a mithril or something. And can lightsabers cut mithril? These are the exciting questions that multiverses make us answer. And I'm not sure. I played also about the role-playing sort of a video game of Planescape Torment, which that was definitely a multiverse thing where all the planes were coming together in. Was it Sigil, the City of Doors, where it's mainly set?
Yes, that's one of my very favourite, well, it's probably my favourite computer role-playing game.
Mm, no, definitely. I really enjoy playing through that, and I'm looking forward to the new sort of Kickstarter one around that.
Yes.
But that definitely, yeah, brought in the, from memory, it's all set in the one place, but that one place is just a mashup of several places that come together. So you've got a whole variety of characters all walking the same streets, as opposed to multiverses where you actually do go off and explore multiple universes. Both kind of give you a different flavour, I guess. It's whether you're meeting different characters or whether you're meeting different worlds as your kind of daily adventure.
Yeah, because Sliders was kind of more like the sort of what if, you know, JFK hadn't died or whatever. The universes seemed to be, I mean, there were some really wild universes, but there was nothing sort of really out there. And just being able to plumb, you know, all the settings that we've come across, you know, and in the last, you know, 15, 20, 30 years, you know, is exciting. But when I tried, I did a little multiverse experiment, kind of similar to what you did, Ben, you know, a few years ago. And I had people, one guy wanted to be, I think, a predator. and that's when it's time to sort of mediate on what, you know, as a GM, what, and I wanted people to pick whatever they wanted, you know. And this time around, when I asked people, I didn't want people to know that it was a multiverse from the outset, because I thought that would be a fun, you know, surprise to find out. But
it was.
Oh, good.
I can testify. Yeah.
But I did start in sort of a universe that was kind of a mashup on its own anyway. I mean, Hellboy is kind of four color, a little bit, you know, Cthulhu, you know, it's kind of a mishmash, and it allows you to create heroes who are sort of larger than life anyway. So I thought that would stand us in good stead, and it seems to have so far. But yeah, that time it was just like the predator guy just couldn't, you know, because he couldn't really communicate with the others, or he might have been an alien. I can't remember. He might have wanted to be an alien or something.
That's surely worse.
Yeah, and that was obviously quite antagonistic towards humans. So
antagonistic, isn't it? Yeah.
You meet another NPC. Oh, I'm going to grab him and cocoon him for my queen.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've really got to stop doing that.
So, yeah, no points for you, basically. I can't remember. It was really interesting. We had Doc Savage.
Yeah.
I think he was a predator. I can't remember. It might have been a werewolf guy or something. I don't know. But I don't know. Yours, Ben, sounded fun though. You know, you've got Jedis and, or Jedi, I suppose.
Did it give you the chance to answer, you know, who would win in a fight between Superman and Goku or something?
Yes, unbeknownst to me, given it was such a dungeon crawly, combat heavy game, I was basically just answering all those internet questions of sort of, you know, shark versus bear and onwards,
right,
in role playing form. But it was It was satisfying. These were the days where we were happy just to roll dice and kill things. The story didn't have to matter too much.
No, right. Do you think we would have more success if we did a podcast where we argued the relative merits of these things instead of talking about multiverses or anything? Shark versus bear.
I'm not sure we would go too far wrong doing that.
I'm sure it's a certain niche of the internet that enjoy that sort of thing. I'm sure
it's probably not a niche. It's probably everybody.
like the niche that like pictures of kittens.
Yep.
So it's like Deadliest Warrior, but with, you know, animals. Anything. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Absolutely. Bang
superheroes.
On. What's even more frightening, a bear holding a shark? Yeah.
Wow.
A bear using a shark as a weapon.
That's going to be my character. I'm ready. Let's do this.
I think that was a Strong Bad episode or something. I don't know. I'm not sure. But what would you choose then, Ben? Like, well, what's your? Have you got the? I have to resort to that question. If you were going
what would
to,
I choose?
Yeah. If you were going to sort of run a multiverse campaign and you could travel to different worlds, where would you begin? Or like, what character would you choose if you were playing or something?
Well, I think if I was running one and involving the one that sort of bubbles under in my mind, which is a blatant plagiarism from Eternal Darkness, which is a fantastic GameCube game.
Oh, I never got
but
to
just
play it.
really good, and each it's sort of episodic. You're actually playing someone walking around an old house who's keeps discovering secrets of this overall overarching plot, and then upon discovering each secret they start reading another section of a book or another sort of document, and then it's all kind of like Scooby-Doo dilulu, 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 and you fade out and you play that episode of the game. So what it was quite a nice progress through history. I think the first episode you were playing in the Roman era. And then step forward, I think there was Egyptian Tomb Raider style one. There was a World War One setting, several others in between. But each time facing the same Cthulhu-esque evil, coming up against the same enemies, and having to defeat them in different ways. I mean, the Roman guy's got a gladius, and then later on you've got two pistols and shooting at them. But obviously the difficulty scales up quite nicely. And then there was an interesting magic system which actually grew throughout the game. So as each of your characters suddenly discovered the Dark Elder secrets, they had access to all the magic you've had access to previously, and then probably learn one new power as they go. So I quite fancied writing some campaign built around that, where, again, you've got the idea that everyone's going to play sort of one character who translates through history. But then in each time zone, you can play a bit of a one-shot. So in the Roman zone, I had the idea that one of them was going to just be a traitor, kind of betray them. And so, I mean, some of these episodes don't end well for the characters. They don't have to end well because the overarching story is what matters. So, you know, it might be, I think, you know, you get to the end, the one guy turns traitor and all the Romans are turned into zombies or devoured by the elder creature. That's the end of that story. On to the next story. I don't know, but just to help them play out differently and give players a chance sometimes to play that slightly traitorous role, which is quite fun in sort of more social games, but obviously not very good in a long-term campaign if they're going to kill your character off. But if you're playing a different character each week, maybe it's not so bad.
Have you, either of you guys read Planetary?
Yes.
No.
Tell
me about Planetary.
Do you want to go ahead, John?
No, go ahead. Sorry, Will.
Okay. Planetary is it was long running in the sense that it took a very long time to finish, but I think there are about 29 issues that took about 10 years or something to do by Warren Ellis, and the artist was John Cassidy, I think. And it started out as sort of Ellis pastiching various sort of superhero things. So there's sort of a thing near the beginning where someone, you know, is exposed to gamma radiation and dies horribly as opposed to becoming the Incredible Hulk. And there's sort of an homage to Japanese kaiju movies. So there's this island filled with, you know, a Godzilla knockoff and a Mothra knockoff and all these things.
That sounds great.
It's fantastic. It's a really good series. It's really funny, particularly if you know a lot about the comics and that kind of thing. But over time, it's sort of it's about stories, I guess. I mean, a lot of comics are, obviously. It's one of those things. But they decided to sort of deal with like the history of the comic to an extent. So there's pastiches of sort of pulp comics, Doc Savage, all that kind of thing, as well. And it's a really good series. I recommend it to anyone that likes comics.
The reason I bring it up is game designer Kenneth Haidt sort of mentioned it as one of their sort of ideas that they sort of on their podcast they were sort of just throwing out ideas of stuff that have been abortive attempts at games or just like random ideas for people to just pick up and use, and one of them was you know, he wanted to run a campaign that kind of sounds similar to what you described in Eternal Darkness, Ben. Mm-hmm. You know, where you've got these, you know, you start in a certain era or with a certain like Sherlock Holmes versus, Cthulhu or something, and you just play a shot, one episode in that sort of universe, and then after it finishes, you just kind of go on to the next thing. I think that's what he was saying, and he said it was kind of largely inspired by Planetary. So I got this. I have because I haven't read it either, but I got the sense that it was kind of, this weird episodic thing going through time or different eras or something. So, but I love the idea of that. Sorry.
Looks like one for a Christmas wish list, I suspect.
Well, on the topic of, it's not quite on the topic of multiverses, it's more on the topic of, parallel universes, but there is one point where the team sort of meet Batman. And so, to begin with, he's sort of the Batman of the 30s, this sort of vigilante character that carries a gun, all that kind of thing. And then, there's another one who's more like sort of the Adam West campy Batman from the TV show, who has bat female villain repellent spray, I think it is, which is very good. And silly, because it's a silly kind of thing. And there's one that's like the Batman from Dark Knight Returns by Frank Miller, and that's a nice issue. It's very well put together. The art style sort of changes for each incarnation as well.
And did these Batmen meet each other, or they? I can't
No,
remember if they
they
say
only
something.
met the main characters, the planetary team.
Ah, I see. But it's kind of going back to the idea of time travel. I mean, that adds another wrinkle to if you're in a multiverse, can you have time travel? I mean, in Zelazny's Amber, they kind of explain it as different universes move at different speeds, so you can kind of essentially you can time travel that way. But sort of for me, that presents another exciting thing in role playing is just the idea of time travel. I just like the idea of a story, like going through the different eras and sort of exploring all the sort of fun aspects of things in our history. I think it would be quite hard to do that for something that doesn't have a big backstory. Maybe with Star Wars, you could do, obviously they've got the Old Republic and everything, but most of the other settings I can think of are pretty much timeless, I mean, Middle Earth has quite a long history,
Well, yes.
but I'm not sure if to most people if it would be that noticeable what's different about, Middle Earth in the First Age versus, the Fourth Age, or if it would even be that interesting to most your average player, unless they were just, Lord of the Rings nuts,
You're right, probably. I mean, I think there are settings that have, tons and tons and tons and tons of fluff, but to enjoy them, you only need to necessarily know what's going on in the bit that you're in at the moment.
Yeah, which why something like the Eternal Darkness style game works well, because it's lots different time periods, but different time periods of Earth, a place we already know somewhat the
Sure,
history
yeah.
of, so you don't have to re-explain to the players, this is why it's really relevant that now this is happening and that's not happening. I mean, even with Deadlands, which is, set in based on the real kind of Civil War and Wild West time in the US, but then the small sort of splinter off where different things happen, therefore the Deadlands universe gets created. We discover the limits of our history very quickly as we're playing the game, going, all right, I'm going to buy a bowler hat. Did they have bowler hats in the Wild West? I don't know. Let's Google bowler hats in the Wild West. So you just kind of realize very quickly you get out your depth on all this campaign detail if you're playing in unfamiliar time zones.
Sure. Well, it depends. I mean, I played I've played, a sort of medieval game with guys who were studying medieval history and would correct people quite, viciously if they tried to do anything that they felt was unrealistic for whatever reason. So you can go overboard on that, I think.
Yeah, sure.
That's probably a topic for another podcast, how,
You should strive for realism, but how realistic should games be? Yeah, that's a good question.
Because I think Kenneth Haidt and Robin Laws bring that up as well, I think he mentioned a what sounded from the on the surface like a brilliant idea of a campaign. I think it was something to do with Shakespeare, like essentially a play that was about the political intrigue. Oh, sorry, not a play. A game that was about the political intrigue of putting on a play, you know, in some particular era. I wish my memory was better. But it sounded fantastic. But these were all students who kind of really knew Shakespeare inside and out.
Sure.
And really, you know, could just swim inside the material and not need a lot of, you know, cues to understand what was going on. It sounded like a brilliant idea for a campaign, but not something that might have wide appeal, unfortunately. But I could see how that would be challenging as well if you have someone who really knows the subject and just can't get over the fact that, you know, X, Y, Z. I mean, I'm kind of that way about the Old West in some ways, because there is a romantic version of the Old West, and the reality is probably much different, I think.
Yeah.
One of the guys in our group said that, in answer to your question, Ben, or you probably know the answer, actually, bowler hats were very common, weren't they? I'm not sure about in the actual West, but of that era, they were the most common hat of the time, probably in the more civilized areas of the world, but I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think we discovered that they did. I mean, even in the Deadwood TV show, there's people walking around in the, you know, Deadwood was by far from the civilized part of the Wild West. So yeah, we allowed bowler hats. They went in. I think I've pretty much covered my experience and my wishes for a multiverse. I don't think I've ever quite got it working for me. I know. We talked about it quite a bit a few years ago, trying to get one going. Sounds like you have got that game going now. But yeah, it's certainly always an interesting topic, and certainly always something I'm, given I have spent the last couple of years now mainly running one shots, something I'll be keen to put in. I'm eyeballing up this Flux game because I like the idea you can just flip between systems and create some sort of continuity there, which if I'm only going to be running one shots anyway, for the few players who keep coming along time and time again, it would be nice to give them just that little bit of continuity without maybe chaining myself to one system or one setting for a long time.
Sure. Good.
Okay, well, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.